Little Lep, where have you been?
Naughty, naughty.
Hey, that's right. Oughta naughty you. Keeping me from my rounds. I'm late as it is. Now stay put. Don't go anywhere till I get back. Understand me?
Nice.
Merry Christmas, you filthy animals. We are the real thing, exclusively on morelikeradio.com. It is December 13th, 2016, and I am Mark Nixon. As always, I'm joined by my co-host, Chris Wetton. Currently, his car is being turned into Swiss cheese. How are you, Chris?
Doing great, man. How about you?
I'm good, man. It's been a while.
No fucking shit, lady. Do I sound like I'm ordering a pizza?
I need backup now! Now, goddammit, now! It's been a while, folks, and I finally charged my computer and I got a new charger, so we're not talking on a phone anymore like we did the last time, but as always, we appreciate your patronage, we appreciate you following us on Facebook and Twitter. It is The Real Thing, MRL, THEREELTHINGMLR, so there you go. Number time, it's number time, Chris, and as it was... last weekend.
Number time for Buddy.
And this past weekend, because it's been the number one movie for three consecutive weekends, I believe, Moana.
Mona.
Mona.
I say it like Tony Danza.
Yeah.
Mona.
Mona made $18
million. God dang.
$18 million for a cumulative total of $144
million. Woo. Yeah. You know, Pixar, Disney, they make something. It's a surprise when it's not number one for 3 weeks in a row.
Like Planes?
Yeah, like Planes or something like that, or Cars 2 or whatever. You know, everybody's like, whoa, what happened?
Yeah.
But by all accounts, this one is very good, and it's made a lot of money. I have not seen it, amazingly.
Really?
Yeah, I haven't seen it. Well, my kids are on my ass about it, too.
Are they pronouncing it correctly, or are they just saying, just say it's the Mona. We want to go to Mona.
Who the hell knows? I mean, I barely listen to them. Like, they want to see the movie with the big guy and the tattoo and the little girl, and like, okay, yeah, we'll go see it.
Kind of a surprise as far as I was concerned, because I really wasn't expecting much out of Office Christmas Party, but that was second place.
Yeah.
That made $16 million.
I think that people are just, first of all, there haven't been many great comedies recently.
Yeah.
That's not to say that this is a great comedy, like, you know, I mean, the reviews are sort of like, eh, it's all right.
But it has very reputable, funny people that are involved.
Reputable, funny people in it. Yeah. It's like well-timed, it's a Christmas movie, people like comedies, people like Christmas comedies, and right now, especially, I think...
we need a fucking laugh.
We need a laugh here. Like, please, anybody, somebody make a dick joke, please.
Desperately.
God.
Yeah. So, rounding out Fantastic Beasts, Arrival, and Doctor Strange.
Ricker.
Your top five, ladies and gentlemen. And so, I know that it is always a good time, this particular time period, as far as the year where December leads into January and all that sort of thing, where you get really good movies that are going to be released specifically for award season. I know Golden Globe nominations were made. We'll get to that in a second. But we were actually able to watch a couple of movies that may be up for consideration. Oscar time, definitely for Golden Globes. Chris, you saw Loving.
Yeah, I saw Loving, the Jeff Nichols movie.
With Joel Edgerton as the lead.
Joel Edgerton is the lead. Ruth Negga, I think I'm saying that right.
Correct. N-E-G-G-A.
Yeah, you don't pronounce the R in the end, as I've been told my whole life.
Oh, okay.
yeah, no, that's, you know, like the story of Mildred Loving and her husband Richard, I think his name was.
Okay.
Anyway, you know, a white man and a black woman in Virginia in the, you know, 1960s who were
arrested
and married and arrested for their interracial marriage. Yeah. And the story of how their relationship went through the courts all the way up to and including the Supreme Court and, you know, paved the way for interracial marriage to be legal in states where it previously was not.
Now, I heard a little bit about this movie on NPR where they were interviewing Jeff Nichols and he was talking about how when he was reading about this particular couple's story that he actually almost felt kind of ashamed that he didn't know about it. Like, yeah. He thought it was very, very significant and very, very important to say.
Yeah.
To turn it into something that other people could, you know, learn from and all that type of thing. So, did they actually get married in Virginia?
Yeah, they did.
Did they really?
No, they got married in Washington, D.C. And then traveled back to Virginia.
Wow.
And then, you know, therein lies the problem. They had to go down there to get married. And, you know, and I understand what Nichols is talking about because we've all heard of some of the, you know, more famous Supreme Court cases, whether it's Roe v. Wade or, you know, Plessy versus Ferguson or Brown versus the Board of Education or whatever.
Right.
But I'd never heard of this one. I didn't know that there was a Supreme Court case leading to this. And the movie is, it's not your typical Jeff Nichols kind of thing. It's not what you would sort of expect from him in that there's no supernatural element to it. There is no, you know, it's not a thriller in any type of way.
Okay.
It's not a mystery in any type of way. It's just a straight historical drama about these two. It's told in a very kind of reserved, muted way.
Okay.
Very much the way, like, Clint Eastwood directs movies. Like, just straightforward. Here's the story. And there's no bells and whistles. Just, you know, an interesting story with good acting.
Okay.
And I liked it. I mean, you'd be hard-pressed to sit through it and be like, yeah, it was shit. You know, like, no, I don't think anybody would do that. I can't say that it's something that I'm going to be dying to watch again, but I'm glad I saw it. The performances are fantastic. Nick Kroll shows up as, you know, this ACLU lawyer, and Nick Kroll, of all people, kind of steals a few of the scenes that he's in by being
really,
yeah, I mean, turns in a decent performance as this sort of fast-talking, you know, ACLU New York lawyer.
Yeah. Because I know that several of our friends like the show that he used to have before it, you know, finally wrapped up. And I know him from The League, that show on FX. And so...
Yeah, he had the Kroll show. Yeah. And he's been in... You've seen him in a couple different movies and TV shows and stuff. Generally known as kind of a comedian, you know. I mean, not known as a serious actor. I don't know what drove them to cast Nick Kroll in this part, but he does a really good job in it.
Nice.
There's really not a whole lot of actors that you would recognize in the movie.
Okay.
But everyone in it, you know, soup to nuts, does a fantastic job. You know, I mean, I can see why people are talking about this movie for acting, you know, nods as far as Oscars and award season goes and things like that. I mean, it's all very, very good.
Do you believe that Jeff Nichols is good at picking something that would seemingly be outside of his comfort zone when it comes to doing this particular movie as opposed to something that is of a supernatural nature or that sort of thing?
Yeah, I mean, in his previous movies that have had that little... It's not even like he was making, you know... He wasn't making Cowboys versus Aliens or something like that. He was making sort of character dramas that had this kind of supernatural vein running through them. It's not like that was the crux of the story or anything like
that. Right, it wasn't overpowering.
Yeah. Maybe mostly in something like Midnight Special, and even in that movie, it's very subtle. This is just the character drama without any of that. And frankly, he knocked it out of the fucking park, you know? I mean, you'd be hard-pressed to find any director who would do a better job of just telling a... You know, the story is good enough as it is. You don't need anything else. You don't need any bells and whistles. As a matter of fact, that would screw it up. Like, this is a story. It's a historical, you know, a piece of history that did happen not that long ago.
Right.
And it deserves to be told in a straightforward way. That's what he does. And it works. You know, it's the kind of movie that probably you could show to a, you know, to a high school class, you know, like an American history class. There's nothing... There's no nudity, there's no extreme violence, there's not any, you know, swearing that I can recall. It's just kind of an ugly piece of American history that is told in a very straightforward way, and again, you'd be hard-pressed to watch this and say you didn't like it. I mean, it's kind of, kind of like watching Dateline NBC or something like that. It's just, you know.
Well, without, you know, obviously, it would behoove everyone to obviously watch this movie, but do you believe that the Lovings were given their proper due as far as
this I think so. Concerned? The relationship between the two of them is at the heart of the movie, and you really get a sense that they did this not, there was no political motivation to anything that they did.
Gotcha.
They only wanted to be together, they only wanted to love their children, no pun intended, and they wanted to, you know, be left alone. They didn't even want the recognition. They didn't even want, oh, look at us, we're an interracial couple in Virginia. It wasn't about that.
Yeah.
It was only about, hey, we love each other, we're not bothering anybody. Leave us alone. This is none of your business, you know?
Gotcha.
And absolutely, I think they do a fantastic job of being respectful towards them.
I mean, it seems like they got a lot of accolades, too, because both Joel Edgerton and Ruth Negga both got nominated for Golden Globes for their respective categories for Best Actor and Actress. And
yeah,
so.
And you, if you watch the movie, you can see why. I mean, Edgerton gives a very muted sort of performance. That's, by all accounts, how, you know, Mr. Loving was.
Yeah.
And Ruth Negga, so weird saying that name.
Yeah.
Can we just mention that? Like, I'm sorry. There's an elephant in the room with casting this woman.
We're really trying to be respectful here. On the real thing, on morelikeradio.com.
My God, I hope I'm pronouncing that right. No, I mean, she is tremendous. You know, I mean, she's the one that's getting probably more accolades even than he is and more recognition from the movie.
Right.
She's very, very, very good.
Okay.
Everything about it. And it's just, once again, Jeff Nichols. I hate to just be blowing this guy every time his name comes up, but the guy has done no wrong in my book. This is not what you expect from him if you'd seen, you know, Shotgun Stories and Mud and Take Shelter and all that other stuff.
Yeah, this
is not what you would expect. It's a little bit of a left turn. But I think down the road, years from now, when we're looking back on his career, it's an interesting turn, and I'm glad he took it. I think it's really cool.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, speaking of good movies, so listeners of morelikeradio.com's The Real Thing, please know that we're constantly, I mean, this is not the only time that we are talking to each other about movies or we're hanging out or any of that sort of thing. You know, we text each other all the time. Hey, Chris texted me the other day. He's like, listen, because our movie theater sucks to a certain degree, but it's the season. It's the season for good movies and everything. So he's texting me. He's like, hey, Manchester by the Sea and Nocturnal Animals are going to be out this weekend. I was like,
at our theater.
At our theater at the Cobb, right, in Lakeland. And so I was like, yeah, which one are you going to go see? And Chris was saying, I'm going to probably go see Manchester by the Sea. What are you going to go see, Mark? I'm probably going to go see Nocturnal Animals simply because of the fact that it looked good. Trailer was very intriguing. And my girlfriend was all about Tom Ford because she likes Tom Ford because he's mentioned in the Jay-Z song, you know, Tom Ford.
Seriously? I didn't even know there was a Jay-Z song.
Jay-Z? Jigga Man.
Jigga Man,
yeah, that's right.
He talks about Tom Ford.
Sure. So we're all excited. We're going to watch this movie. And then I ended up finding out that you saw this movie instead of Manchester by the Sea.
Yeah, it was partially about timing. I was like, it's one of those things when you have kids, it's not like, I'm going to go to the movies. Let me get out the newspaper and see what time a showing starts.
Right.
It's more like, what? I can go do something? What starts now? Like, you know, and Manchester by the Sea, I had, you know, 3.5 minutes to get to the theater before it started. And Nocturnal Animals, I had, you know, 11 minutes to get to the theater before it started. So it was partially about that, but it was also, I thought, well, you know, I could wait and go see Manchester by the Sea later on.
Sure.
This evening or whatever. But I was like, well, I don't want to get on there. And I talk about a movie I saw and he talked about a movie he saw. And I'm like, I'm interested in seeing Nocturnal Animals.
Sure.
It's not like I went to see something I didn't want to see. Like, I totally was down with it. I liked A Single Man, Tom Ford's previous movie.
I've never seen that.
It's good.
Okay.
And I also thought the preview was really interesting.
Okay.
And I was super into everything I saw coming out of this movie before. You know,
yeah, and
leading up to seeing it.
And I know Tom Ford and his work, like he's done photo shoots for Vanity Fair, though, was the infamous one with Scarlett Johansson and Keira Knightley, and he's laying there naked or something like that.
Oh, that was him, wasn't it?
That was him, yeah. And he's got, like, his own clothing line, his own cologne line. He's, you know, like, fashion maven, if you will, but yeah. Now he's like recently come into making movies like A Simple Man or Nocturnal Animals.
Simple Man is the Coen Brothers.
I'm sorry, Single Man. So
it was a little confusing because they both came out like maybe the same year or within a year of each other.
I appreciate you saying that because I was trying to like, I'm trying not to say
this
the
guy
movie
made a movie about Jews in Minnesota.
So, Nocturnal Animals. Yeah. The story has. There's a lot of actors in this movie, first of all.
Yeah.
And we should probably mention that there's probably going to be spoilers, because it is kind of a weird plot, but
it's a thriller-type movie. It's very different from Single Man. This is a thriller.
Yes.
Lots of actors.
Lots of actors. There's Jake Gyllenhaal, Amy mm-hmm. Adams, you got Armie Hammer, you've got...
Aaron Taylor-Johnson, Michael
Shannon. Yeah.
Even Michael Sheen in a small part, Jenna Malone in a small part.
Yeah, I caught that, too. I was like, holy shit, that's Jenna Malone.
I think it was just people saying...
I'll do it.
Holy F, I love Tom Ford, I enjoyed his previous movie, and yeah, I'll do it. Whatever.
Okay. Well... What did you think?
I thought I did not like it.
At all?
No. I mean, I did like
it. You had really, really strong feelings on Facebook. I need to pick your brain with this movie because...
I had just seen it when I posted that because this movie does one of those things that for me is just sort of super annoying, which is it's unforgivably artsy.
It insists upon itself?
It insists upon itself. I did not like The Godfather. No, it's unforgivably artsy. First off, from the opening shots of the movie. Is a... 450.
450. I was actually just going to say 4 or 5, but you're actually going for weight.
Split the difference. you were going to call her a 4 or a 5?
No. I'm talking about 4 or 5 different women.
I thought you were going to rate her on a scale of 1 to 10. You're going to give her a 4 or 5.
Got a pile of 4 to appreciate
Mark's,
it.
Mark's generous. No, we're talking about a 400-pound woman at best.
Women, by the way.
Women, whatever. Dancing in go-go boots. So 400 pounds.
Okay.
Butt-ass naked, with the exception of go-go boots.
Right.
Dancing in slow motion for the entire opening credit sequence. So 3 minutes, right?
Like
roughly 3 minutes of these women.
Yeah. It's very jarring.
Jarring.
Very jarring. However, my counter to that is this. Anybody that was in the audience that had any sort of like... I mean, I was kind of like, whoa, this is... Because you... He's only made 2 movies, but based on the trailer that we were watching, I'm assuming like it's just going to be full of beautiful people and beautiful people doing terrible things to each other and all that sort of thing. And then you've got, you know, these overweight, obese women dancing around in boas and go-go boots and all this sort of thing, looking fabulous in their own minds, by the way. However, I would say to anybody that has any sort of complaint on that, like, oh, you think that's disgusting? What have you done with your life that you are dancing naked for a Tom Ford movie? Oh, you haven't done that? Oh, well, then you can shut the fuck up. So.
I always wonder about that, though. Like, you know, at some point, there was a casting call that got sent out. And the casting call, you know, for the Amy Adams part was, you know, we need a beautiful 30-year-old, you know, in shape, obviously intelligent, you know, strong actress, blah, blah, blah. And for Jake Gyllenhaal, it was like, you know, strapping young man, steamy good looks, you know, somewhere in his 30s, able to portray intelligence, blah, blah, blah. The casting call for the chick in the opening credits was, gonna need to be 400 pounds, okay with taking the top off, okay with jiggling the titties in slow motion while, you know, wearing heavy makeup and white go-go boots.
Right, but there was it wasn't gratuitous, though. Like, it
wasn't gratuitous?
I didn't think it was, because...
What the fuck?
This is where we're gonna start differing in regards to this movie.
400-pound woman dancing in slow motion naked in front of the camera for 3 minutes. That's not gratuitous?
I will tell you that our friend Damon, a.k.a. the American Dream Big D, loves larger women, and so I'm sure that he would not have any sort of issue with this.
Damon likes women with a little bit of weight on
them. But let me tell you something.
This is not about me shaming her for being fat.
Of course not.
That's absolutely not what this is.
It's very artsy. Very artsy fartsy.
It's very, look at me, I'm showing you the grotesque.
But
I am an artiste.
But this is where...
Hey, what did it matter, by the way?
I'm sorry?
What was the point of it? What was the point of that?
Well, my explanation would be this, is that I had problems with this movie as well. And the problem with the movie is that it shouldn't have to explain later on what you were doing at the very beginning or in earlier parts of the movie. For example, that part, because she happens to be an art curator.
Yeah.
And she's showing off her piece and her handsome fucking, he's a 9.5 out of 10. Army Hammer, he's doing something else. He's boning some hot chick. Yeah, so.
God, you gave the fat chick a 4 and you're giving Army Hammer a 9.5?
I'm all over the place.
You are all over the place.
Yeah, so.
Army's a 10, baby.
So she's an art curator and she's so lonely and distressed and he's not paying any attention to her, blah, blah, blah. And then she gets a script, a mysterious package, which is read by some guy. Some guy who, by the way, I don't know how much he makes, but I'm sure he makes more in 1 year than I do in a year, which is really fucking sad.
One of her little lackeys at the museum.
Right, and
Package comes, he reads the little letter that came with it.
Right, and it's from her ex-husband, who happens to be one of her college beaux, and he's from Texas, she's from New York, she's a socialite, et cetera, that I wrote this screenplay, I want to know what you think. I wrote it for you, because it is...
It's a novel. It's a novel.
For Susan. Because the original title of the script was Susan and...
It's a book.
It's a book, I'm sorry.
This movie, Nocturnal Animals, is based on a book called Tony and Susan.
Okay, so... And then she reads the novel, the screenplay, Nocturnal Animals, and then it goes into her interpretation of that, where it's a separate story, but she's reading it, she's getting affected by it, et cetera, et cetera. So, all that being said... The naked fat chicks, to get to the point where, oh, she's an art curator, okay, I get it. All of the shit dealing with Jake Gyllenhaal, and I've seen him in Jarhead, he's the motherfucking Prince of Persia. He was like half his size in Nightcrawler as opposed to this movie, and he was way scarier, way more intimidating. The dude is no slouch, like he's a big guy, but then he's just all like weak and I don't know.
Gyllenhaal's a good actor.
No. I thought it was annoying as fuck. What? I thought it was completely like not believable at all.
You didn't buy him as the sensitive type.
Not at all. Not at all. But then it was discovered later on that, oh, of course he was being written like that because he's writing about himself. Oh my gosh. Like all that shit is just fucking annoying.
So to back up and sort of reframe this a little bit.
Yes, please. Sorry. I'm sorry.
No. Because this movie's all over the fucking map. So, the Amy Adams character and the Jake Gyllenhaal character were together for many years. They broke up. She, you know, her family begged her not to marry him when she was young.
Laura Linney.
Yeah, with this big beehive hairdo.
Yeah.
Big, like, Dallas mama hairdo. She begs her not to marry young Jake Gyllenhaal. Like, he's too sensitive. He's not driven. He's not the kind of guy that you should be with. He's not the kind of man. He's beneath you, blah, blah, blah. She marries him anyway. Everything her mother says is going to be true ends up turning out to be true. She ends up falling out of love with Gyllenhaal and falling in love with Armie Hammer.
Right, she fulfills her destiny.
She fulfills her destiny. She leaves him, as she says, in the most brutal way imaginable. So flash forward 20 years. She is this socialite, New York socialite art dealer. You know, that's where we meet her at the beginning of the movie.
Right.
The gigantic fat woman dancing in slow motion as part of some unveiling of some new art exhibit and so on and so forth.
Right.
She's unhappy with this life that she has now created for herself 20 years later. Extremely unhappy. At the same time, she gets this package in the mail, which is the manuscript from Edward, the Jake Gyllenhaal character, her previous husband.
Yes.
And then she starts, then the movie then splits in two. You get this movie that I've just been describing for the last minute, which is the Amy Adams and, you know, reading a book.
Right.
And then you have the story inside the story. The movie you're watching, Nocturnal Animals, shows you both. So you're essentially watching two stories at once.
Yeah, you're hopping back and forth between, actually three, between present day, the story that she's reading, and then all the stuff that happened prior to the story coming to her in the
movie. Yes, so those things are not all told simultaneously. You're getting pieces of them at a time.
Right.
But you'll watch a piece of one, then a piece of another, and so on and so forth.
Right.
The story inside the story, that is to say the manuscript, which is called Nocturnal Animals, is about a sensitive guy, played by Jake Gyllenhaal, because this is her imagining it. This is Amy Adams reading the book, so as you're reading a book, you create these characters and what they would look like, and you even sometimes imagine a particular person or a particular actor or something like that as you're reading a book.
Okay.
She reads it as Jake Gyllenhaal. She reads, he is on a cross-Texas trip. They're headed to Marfa. He and his wife and his daughter.
Yes.
Both redheads.
Yes.
They get waylaid on the road by a group of, you know, young ruffians.
Yeah. In the middle of the night. In the middle of nowhere.
In the middle of a nowhere road in Texas with no lights and nobody around.
I'm never going to West Texas, by the way.
Fuck Texas. Yeah. No, fuck Texas. Yeah. Well, I don't know about that. Some of these hoods are pretty... These guys are pretty good looking. Everybody in this movie is pretty good looking, except for the fat chick at the beginning of the movie. By the way, I think this movie probably should have been called, like, it's Tom Ford's Nocturnal Animals, but it might have been called Tom Ford's Redheads I'd Love to Bang If I Wasn't Gay, but also lots of sweaty young guys in tight jeans, because, as I think I mentioned before, I'm gay.
That's right, that's right.
So, the ruffians, like, rough them up, beat the hell out of Jake Gyllenhaal. They take off with the wife and the daughter.
Right. Kidnap the women, leave
him. Kidnap them. Yeah. Leave him for dead. And yada, 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 cut forth to a little end of the future. They end up, he ends up, you know, hooking up with a sheriff once he gets back to town. They end up finding these bodies of his wife and his daughter.
Right.
And then years go by with them trying to track down these killers, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
And then so on and so forth. That's pretty much the movie. You're going back and forth. Now, that story's somewhat interesting. Would you agree that there are basically two, maybe even three, you got a point, three stories being told here? One of them is interesting. The other is not.
I don't care. Listen, if I wanted to watch beautiful people do terrible things to each other, I'd sit at home and I'd watch The Days of Our Lives or The Young and the Restless. Like, I have no sympathy. I mean, they're not sympathetic characters at all. They're all doing terrible things.
No one in this movie is sympathetic.
In fact, the only person that is kind of sort of sympathetic is the writer Jake Gyllenhaal whenever he's, you know, like, he's just being destroyed by this woman who basically gave him a line and has been just completely convinced, like, I want to marry this man. You can't marry him. Okay, I'm not going to marry him. Because she's, you know, finally, like, fulfilled her destiny and all this other crap. But then it's canceled out by shithead weak sauce Jake Gyllenhaal in the Nocturnal Animals screenplay, where he's just either screaming at and acting at the fucking camera, or he's... Dude, like, he's built like a linebacker, like 230. Like, he could take on... or at least get a knock on one of these guys, like kick their ass and stuff, and he's just like curling up in a ball while his, you know, redhead family is getting murdered and all this shit. Really, the only thing that kind of saved this movie for me, or at least made it halfway interesting, is Michael Shannon.
Yeah, Michael Shannon showing up does, and that's partially maybe why I prefer that one story that's being told there.
Yeah.
But it's not just that. I mean, Michael Shannon does steal every scene of practically every movie or TV show he's ever in, because he's just a fantastic actor. His part is also happens to be interesting. He's kind of a take-no-shit Texas sheriff who is
dying sort of lung cancer.
Dying of lung cancer. He's sort of intrigued by Jake Gyllenhaal's story, but also a little bit disgusted by him.
Yeah.
Yet sort of takes it on to sort of help this guy figure things out, because he can't believe that Jake Gyllenhaal just left his family as he did.
Or wouldn't want to. Like, he's almost kind of goading him, like, you have to make this right. This is all about justice. I swear to God, I'm not going to let anything like this happen to, you know, if I can help it.
Yeah.
That type of thing. And going back to our last show, when we were talking about Michael Stolberg.
Yeah.
Right? And how he just uses no...
Nothing. Silence.
Yeah. And he's just staring at this fucking guy in the jail, and then he starts asking him, "Are you an owl?" And I'm thinking, "Oh my gosh, he's channeling Al Pacino from Heat."
Well, but even before he started with the owl thing, Michael Shannon, you're right, is great with silence. And then he starts doing, like, he's not even saying anything; he's doing these like grunts and stuff, you know. And so you're really into this story. And then they keep cutting back to shots of Amy Adams reading it.
Right.
And shots of Amy Adams in the bathroom reading it. And shots of Amy Adams in the tub reading it.
Just
and
anguishing she's about
wearing,
it.
Yeah, like she will, like, you know, very thoughtfully remove the glasses from her face. Which, by the way, I'm pretty sure she borrowed from Sam Ace Rothstein in the last shot of Casino.
Ace like, is high!
Big fucking Harry Carey glasses.
I can still make winners. I can read this screenplay. And that's it.
She's wearing those glasses throughout the entire movie.
Oh, hold on. Speaking of that's it, this is another problem I had with this fucking movie. So, there's all this inner turmoil. Script has been read.
Yeah.
And we go back to real time, where Amy Adams is... In the midst of all this screenplay reading and her internal anguish and the story's carrying itself with her, it's affecting her everyday life because it's so compelling and devastating. She even writes an email that says so many words to to Edward. And Edward is intrigued as well, and he answers back, I will absolutely have dinner with you.
Anytime, anywhere.
So we go to a shot, a very long, 4-minute shot of her just eating at a restaurant.
Right.
Eating at an Applebee's or an Olive Garden.
Drinking a scotch or a bourbon or whatever.
And then the movie's fucking over. Like, okay, yeah. Like, as if... Okay, listen, I get that
more artsy-fartsy shit.
I know that you want me to care about Amy Adams in this movie, but just ending it without anything at all, there was like 4 or 5 people in my theater, I swear to God, they were like, that's it?
Yeah, like, even I was sort of looking at my watch, so I knew the movie was winding down.
Yeah.
But I was kind of shocked by how... they end it, like, just sort of like,
I would
just sort of fucking conks out
I on swear
the
to,
screen.
I swear to God, this movie is one of those movies where you're going to hear it. You're going to hear it in the next month or so, or when it gets fucking nominated for an Oscar, some bullshit, because it's already been nominated for Best Director and Best Screenplay for Golden Globes. I didn't know if you realized that.
Golden Globes always nominate a bunch of stuff. But well right. beforehand, it's
of
like
course.
They nominated Johnny Depp for The Tourist or something like that.
But
know?
My
like, whoops.
But my point is that you're going to get some asshole, some hipster, a theater
listen.
Connoisseur. Oh, you didn't understand the ending.
I was already on Reddit last night. There was already tons of this shit.
Kiss my ass.
And here's the thing: I was like seriously, like on there, just like, what the fuck was that about? And the thing is, there's two kinds of people. There's going to be the kind of people who are going on there to talk about these sort of theories and create these kind of theories. And then there's people like me going on there because they're like, what the fuck? I guess I'm not smart enough for this. Like, this movie wants to be David Lynch, by the way. Like, it's obvious that they want to be Wild at Heart David Lynch or Mulholland Drive David Lynch.
It didn't go weird enough.
It didn't go weird enough, and when it did go weird, it didn't blend it in with the beautiful. You got to blend the grotesque and the beautiful if you want to be David Lynch. That's one of the things that David Lynch does so well.
Right.
He sort of reveals the grotesque beneath the beautiful.
Okay, well...
this movie doesn't do that. It's like, hey, here's a fat chick! Hey, here's Amy Adams! Hey, here's Aaron Taylor Johnson...
taking a shit.
Taking a shit, nude, as if that's bad enough that I have to watch him taking a shit, then I've got to watch him... wiping his ass,
which is,
as if that's not bad enough, and then I've got to watch him removing the toilet paper from his ass, and I have to see the brown shit streak on the toilet paper.
Yeah.
What the fuck?
He did. He definitely wiped his ass in a really weird way. So.
Yeah, I know. He went from he
what?
Went,
like fucking
like,
front to back or some
like
bullshit.
Down to up or something. Like
oh, no.
that. I don't know what's going on.
Kick ass can't wipe his ass correctly.
Then more like brown ass. Should have. He's got to do that thing where you plant your left foot, but you raise your right foot up on the toes.
It's
and
just shaking.
It didn't seem believable enough. Like
no.
That had to. I wonder if he was taking a shit or not. But no, seriously, that's what this movie does. It's like, here's something grotesque, and here's something beautiful, and here's something grotesque, and here's something beautiful. And this was a book, and all of this stuff came from the book Tony
yeah.
and Susan. Much of this stuff.
Okay.
And so I'm sure that Tom Ford read this book, and I'm sure it's a very good book. It was a critically acclaimed book, and it was a big hit.
Yeah.
When you're reading a book, a novel, it has ways of sort of laying some of these things out to you in such a way that you connect them more. You grasp the subtleties beneath multiple threads of story and how they connect with each other.
Yeah.
And movies can do that. You can take a book like that has these subtle connections and weave them together with interesting visuals. Nocturnal Animals doesn't do that.
Yeah.
You have these two stories that if you're not interested in going home to Reddit or Wikipedia and reading about it afterwards,
yeah.
I defy anyone to really put together everything that I was reading last night on the internet. And there's a lot of it. And some of it even makes sense. Who gives a shit is my thing.
Right. This is not Star Wars or Harry Potter. This is not.
Right. No, yeah. It's not.
Yeah. So you're not going to take the extra time. Like, I'm telling you, there was actually, I'll take it back. There was one point where, towards the end, when... Gyllenhaal and Taylor Johnson are involved in a fracas, and one's got a gun, the other's got a crowbar, and you know the last swing before the immediately cut to black, and there was like one lady in the audience like, oh!
Yeah,
like serious, you know, concern and everything else, and then one of them dies, then the other one dies, and then it cuts to the whole Amy Adams fake dinner fake out.
Yeah,
like to where like I don't understand how you expect... Listen, I don't expect how you would expect the normal moviegoer. You can't make a movie for your friends and expect it to be successful or at least to be considered.
But that's where... That's where it is. That's where it's too fucking artsy. Yeah. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
And that's what's so unforgivably fucking artsy about it.
Yeah.
It's you just lay this thing out there that makes no sense. You know, it's like... It's just like artsy, like music that's too artsy, like Yoko Ono's music.
Yeah.
You try and listen to it, and it sounds terrible, and she's like, well, that's art, you know? Or you know, it's like, well, okay, fine. I guess you can make anything and say it's art.
Sure.
I guess you can have any movie, and the plot lines don't connect to each other, and you have two seemingly somehow related stories. Great mysteries and great thrillers,
yeah.
Whether it's, you know, Fatal Attraction, Suspects, yeah. or Fatal Attraction, or... Yeah. Cape Fear and things like this. Some of the great, like, sort of noir... Mulholland Drive. Some of the great sort of noirish thrillers.
Yeah.
They give you these little pieces of things to grab onto so that you can almost figure out the mystery yourself. You almost can, and maybe you even can. But this movie doesn't do that. There's nothing for you to grab onto as you're watching it. You're only just sort of passively taking these images in. There's no way for you to sort of understand... And by the way, it's not really even a mystery. You know from the beginning... Who did everything and why? Like, it was a rape murder because they're fucking crazy. Like, there's nothing... The mystery of the movie is what's going on inside Amy Adams' head. And at the end of the movie, who gives a shit?
Yeah, I don't give a fuck.
Nobody fucking cares.
And you got someone reading mail to you and you are paying them to read mail to you. I don't feel sorry for you.
It's hard to give a shit. Yeah. So the movie is sort of generally about regret and, you know... life choices and the way we judge each other and things like that. But
there are better ways of telling that story.
There's better ways of telling that story, especially if you want to make it a thriller. We spend a lot of time inside this story within a story, which ironically is the more interesting of the two stories.
Yeah.
But it doesn't matter because we know it's a fucking story. We know it didn't happen.
Yeah.
You know, like it's not like there's no stakes whatsoever in this story within a story.
So, bottom line, yes or no, would you recommend this movie?
Fucking sound like I'd recommend
it. Well, there you go.
No, that's fucking great. Everybody should go see it right now.
I wish we would have seen Manchester by the Sea.
Yeah, so I'm probably going to see that tonight.
So as we move on the real thing on morelikeradio.com.
Aaron Taylor Johnson too, by the way. Not a good actor.
He's very annoying. He's
so
very annoying.
God, it was just this kid to tone it down.
It was just like he was being super annoying and like really like annoying creepy. Like I can see this guy at fucking Molly's downtown Lakeland, and he'd be acting the exact same way. And then you've got Jake Gyllenhaal, who, again, swear to God, man, he's fucking built. Like, he's built like a fucking rock. He just did Southpaw, for God's sakes, all fucking ripped like a goddamn boxer.
Big,
he's like,
I actually will say that I thought Gyllenhaal was not terrible. I didn't think he had there's not a great part there. It's not a well-written part.
Yeah.
But it's pretty bad when you're in
crying and screaming and everything else. Yeah. Like, I don't care.
When you're in a scene with Michael Shannon and people are telling you to tone it down, like you need to take a long, hard look in the mirror.
And to that I would say, he's like Sling Blade and shit. Rapid fire time. Let me get your take on...
Patow.
Several things that we both have seen and or... The latest that has gone on as far as movie news is concerned. First of all, let's start off. Jimmy Kimmel hosting the Oscars.
Woohoo!
Yeah?
I love it.
Yeah?
I like Jimmy Kimmel. You know, I mean, there's like different categories of the current late night show hosts, which is you got like the Jimmy Fallons and the James Cordens, which are sort of like for the masses and probably do the best bits and might even be the most popular.
Right.
But like have no balls and like have no... They're not really classy in any way. I don't think they're genuinely funny. I think it's all sort of like... disposable humor. It's all sort of cultural touchstones and things like that.
Right.
And then you've got the really like kind of intelligent guys who probably could do a better show if they weren't so interested in being smart, which is like Colbert and Seth Meyers.
Okay.
And then right in the middle in the sweet spot is Jimmy Kimmel.
Okay.
I think.
And if you keep going in that direction, who do you get to? Like Ricky Gervais? And
yeah. Okay. Like you get like it's too far. It's too idiosyncratic, you know, like... But right in that sweet spot, which is he makes a lot of funny shit, but he's also enough. And there's like, you know, cultural touchstones and like, you know, links to things that are going on in pop culture.
Yeah.
But also a little bit smart. I think Kimmel is right in the middle there, like perfectly funny. Like shits on Donald Trump, shits on Hillary Clinton, you know, but also kind of shits on Trump more.
Gotcha. Speaking of Trump, rapid fire. Trump versus SNL. Seriously, every single time now, and I'm sure that, you know, obviously Saturday Night Live is absolutely guilty, and they are, in fact, feeding this troll super hard. But any time there's any sort of mention of our future president-elect Donald J. Trump, listen, he doesn't want intelligence briefings, but he'll tweet about...
But he's watching SNL.
This show is the worst show that's ever been written.
Is anyone convinced that he will not watch absolutely every episode?
He will watch every single
episode. Like, does anyone think that... And he's like, it's terrible, never watching it again, I don't know how anyone watches this, not funny, very mean-spirited. And everybody in the fucking universe knows that this Saturday he's going to be like, no, I've got somewhere I've got to be right now. I need to get back to the hotel room.
Sir, it's 11:25.
I know. I'll be right back.
Trump cannot afford a DVR. So.
Trumpkin.
Trumpkin. Pretty much.
Trumpkin.
Next topic. Spider-Man Homecoming. The new trailer came out. What do you think? Please don't choke.
Yeah.
On the real thing, I'm more like radio.com.
I thought, you know, as I'm watching the trailer, like, I remember we talked about with Civil War, Captain America Civil War.
Yes.
Spider-Man was one of the more exciting things about the movie.
Okay.
Because he just got thrown in there. It was like, here's Spider-Man. Bam.
Right.
So, I mean, then I saw the preview and I was like,
Yeah?
It's sort of another, like, are we going to get started with this story again? We got to start from scratch again. We got to fucking do an origin and all this kind of stuff. And I just don't care to see that anymore.
Yeah.
I would rather it just start, he's Spider-Man, you know? But I'll see it. It's got Michael Keaton in it. Like, I did like the kid who played Spider-Man. It's not that I'm not going to see it. It's hard for me to get excited about these kind of previews anymore.
Tom Holland? Isn't that his name?
Yeah, Tom Holland.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. I mean, he was good in the scenes in Captain America.
Because you didn't have to have an origin
to start off.
You
didn't have to have the origin story, yeah.
So I would hope that they would, you know, kind of sort of remember that very key aspect in their Marvel comic cinematic
no
universe.
No need for an orgy story. Spider-Man Home Coming.
Starring Marissa Tomei. Oh, Aunt May.
Michael Keaton, though. Come on.
Michael Keaton.
Come on.
That's
you
good.
Put Michael Keaton. You could have a preview for fucking Air Bud 7, and I'd be like, not seeing it, and then Keaton's on screen. I'm
Michael
like,
Keaton.
Well, maybe I'll see it.
How about this?
As a villain, too.
Would you see...
Come on, Chris. Chris.
Transformers The Last Knight.
Fuck that.
The only reason why I'm mentioning...
No interest. I didn't even see the last... How many is this? Is this number 5?
I don't know.
There was 3 with LaBeouf.
Right.
And then there was the one with Wahlberg, so this is 5.
This is 5.
Who's in this one? Is Wahlberg?
Mark Wahlberg.
Wahlberg's in this one.
Oh, and Josh Duhamel, I forgot he's coming back.
Oh, yeah. So, who could forget him?
The only reason...
Except, I just forgot him.
The only reason why
wait,
I even...
Wait a minute, I just forgot him again.
The only reason why I'm even mentioning this fucking trailer is because...
It's a bazillion dollars.
It's Michael Bay. It's going to make a fucking mint. But it's got probably one of the worst covers that I've ever heard in my entire life of Do You Realize by Flaming Lips. It's really, really bad.
It is bad.
Yeah, so...
Don't care. Didn't even see the last Wahlberg one. Didn't see the last LaBeouf one. Didn't care for... A lot of people are like, Transformers movies suck. The first one's pretty good, though. Fuck that. First one wasn't good.
First one, I mainly blame because my girlfriend broke up with me. I'm pretty sure that when I took Angela to go see that movie, she's like, I'm not staying with you. I'm moving to Nebraska. It's because of this fucking movie.
Wow.
I totally believe that.
Speaks volumes.
I know, right? What if you care, would you care for The Mummy starring Tom Cruise? Your next trailer.
I wouldn't give a shit.
If it weren't for Tom Cruise. Right.
I don't know what it is about Tom Cruise in our generation. We've had a weird relationship with him.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Because
it was like, we grew up, he was everywhere. We kind of took him for granted.
Right.
Then he went all fucking apeshit on Oprah's couch and, you know, like screaming at Matt Lauer, fucking Good Morning America or whatever.
Oh, just laughing like
maniacally and telling him he's glib about, you know, Scientology and he doesn't know about medicine and things like that. This went all apeshit somewhere around 2005.
Right. Then he did Tropic Thunder.
And then, so at that point, we're all like, oh, fuck Tom Cruise, weirdo. Yeah. Like, I ain't seeing Valkyrie, fuck that. And then he goes and makes Tropic Thunder and he makes Jack Reacher and all this other stuff. And yeah, he just made another... You know, Mission Impossible movie around that time, and we're like, you know what? fuck it. I love him.
I want to see him run all the time.
I want to see it. Like, and once in a while it doesn't work, whether it's the second Jack Reacher movie or Oblivion or something like that. Yeah. Once in a while it doesn't work, but more often than not, it's entertaining.
I do like the fact that he will, he's we can say that he's crazy, right?
I think he is crazy.
Okay,
yes.
So when...
But he applies his crazy to the movie.
Yes, so when he is on the Burj Khalifa in the middle of fucking...
It's like desert. Holy fuck!
He is really rappelling down, like, 700 stories up high in the sky.
And he's smart. Like, as an actor, he's smart. Yeah. He works with, for the most part, he works with good writers. He works with good directors. He works with good... You know, he recognizes talent, you know, whether it's Simon Pegg or somebody like that. He recognizes when he's got, you know, if you go back and watch the last 10 Tom Cruise movies, you'll find that, you know, the romantic interest for the movie was someone who went on to make more movies. The first time you saw her was in that Tom Cruise movie. Yeah. It happens all the time. He's entertaining. We've never really seen him in a horror movie. That was one of the things that struck me watching the preview. I was like, I don't think we've really ever seen Tom Cruise in a horror-type movie.
It's got Russell Crowe, too.
Russell Crowe, who is playing, I think, like, Jekyll and Hyde or something like that.
Ooh, really?
I think he's playing, like, Dr. Jekyll or some shit, or Mr. Hyde, or whatever the fuck it is.
All right, I'm going to fucking watch it.
I know. And the chick from Kingsman. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
She's the mummy.
Oh shit! With the legs.
Yeah, with the legs.
Oh Christ!
The knife legs.
Ooh, give me the knife leg.
Knife leg.
Knife leg. That's the new sequel.
Like a good movie for Machete.
How about? I'm excited for it. War for the Planet of the Apes.
This falls into the Spider-Man Homecoming category for me, which is like. I'm watching the preview, I'm like, yeah, all right, another ape movie, whatever. And then I see Harrelson, and I'm like, fuck yeah. Harrelson's like bad, you know, Uber, like all beefed up and stuff. And
he's traveled from zombie land to the Planet of the Apes.
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
Not enough Woody Harrelson in movies for my liking. What do you think, though? Wait a minute.
Well.
Back up. You haven't talked about the last three that we mentioned. Mummy, you're into it?
Mummy, I'm into it, sure. I'll do Tom Cruise.
Get that drop.
He's gonna run away as fast as possible. But yeah, he's entertaining. I totally watch that. Transformers, I don't give a shit about. I was just mentioning that because of the song.
Yeah.
Spider-Man: Homecoming, fine. Sure. It looks fun. It looks all right. I mean, I'm gonna watch them anyway. I would rather watch a Spider-Man movie than a Thor movie. I just don't want to go through the same goddamn shit all the time where I, like, you've told the story a million times. Just get to it, unless you're going to tell it in a different fashion, like the Flashpoint arcs where Bruce Wayne gets murdered, and Martha Wayne becomes the Joker, and his dad becomes Batman.
Ooh.
Okay?
Yeah,
so
do some different shit.
And we'll do something like
Shake
that.
Shake it up. We've seen it. It just does feel like the first Tobey Maguire Spider-Man movie, that was... 15 fucking years ago?
Yeah.
Like,
and it's already been rebooted.
And we've been rebooting it for the third fucking time since then. So you really gotta bring it if you're gonna, you know.
War for the Planet of the Apes is weird because, honestly, I thought the first one was going to be a joke because it had James Franco in it.
Yeah, everyone did.
Turned out to be really good.
Yes.
Second one was like, yeah, it's pretty good. It's all right.
Not bad.
This one is kind of more of the same, but it's got Woody Harrelson in it, and he's the bad guy. And this is the other thing, too. If I got to hear one more goddamn time about Andy Serkis, and he should be considered for Best Actor Oscar nomination.
It's going to be weird if he does get it, finally, for one of these things. He's going to be like, well, oh, was this a different monkey performance?
Right. And then Jimmy Kimmel will be out there with the golf ball suit on him, you know, and all that sort of thing. The last one that I would mention, Baywatch.
Baywatch. Yeah, don't fucking care.
Don't care.
No,
okay.
Don't care. Do you?
I care.
Why?
Because of The Rock.
Yeah, well, we say that, and I agree. I like The Rock, but I don't go see every Rock movie that comes out.
I will watch every single Rock movie, though.
Really? Yeah. Eventually. You know,
eventually, I will turn it on, and I will give it a shot. And, man, he's got, listen, as our friend Matt and the Line Group had mentioned, he's got charisma to burn. Like, I've been watching him since he was in WWF, when it was still called WWF.
Yeah.
And
he's got a Tom Cruise quality, which is... He doesn't do anything different. You kind of don't want him to.
Yeah.
You know, like, there. As long as he spaces the movies out and is smart enough about how he does it, that's the thing he needs to be careful about is...
Saturation.
Spacing them out a little bit.
Yeah.
Because it gets to a point where you see, like, 3, 4, 5 Rock movies inside of 2 years, and you're like, all right, buddy. Sit down for a minute, okay?
Let's tone it down.
Yeah. Hey, wait a minute. One more. Did you see the Guardians of the Galaxy 2 preview?
Yes.
What'd you think?
That looks really good.
It's really fucking good, right?
Really? Okay, look. This is another thing that I wanted to mention, too.
That's how I want my superhero movies.
On the real thing on morelikeradio.com, let's come up with some rules. I need some rules for some trailers.
Yeah.
You get two trailers.
Yes. No
you
doubt.
Get one 90-second trailer preview-ish exactly. kind of thing.
Yep.
And then you put out a two-and-a-half-minute trailer.
Where you give a teeny bit of story, maybe. You don't even need to, but if you need to, fine. You
right.
can give a little bit if it's, you know, like, you got to intrigue me with the story or whatever.
Right. Of which... Star Wars, the Star Wars franchise, has always done that as far back
smart.
As I can remember.
Smart.
But also Guardians of the Galaxy 2, because it hooks you right in, and then you're watching it. Man, it just looks really weird and funny,
yeah.
and Dave Bautista apparently has got like a really good comedic role in that
He's
movie.
He's got like the best like comedic chops, like who knew it?
Yeah.
Another great rule of trailers is, you know what, don't give any story. Just get, and this has been a rule that's gone back, you know, many, many years, probably 50 years.
Yeah.
Just... cut some of your best scenes together over a kick-ass song.
Yeah.
I got it. Whatever. Especially if you're talking about a sequel, like, you don't need to explain things to us.
No.
Like, we get it. There's going to be something they have to do or the universe is going to blow up.
Don't
know?
Tell the entire goddamn movie from start to finish.
Please.
Yeah, there's that. Or you can focus on one scene.
Yeah.
And just have it at that. I can't remember what movie it was. It was just one scene from that movie. And that was the trailer. I think that was one of the only trailers that it came out with.
Yeah.
Before it, like, turned into, like, international trailer, trailer 2, trailer 3, and all that sort of thing. But, yeah, all of those Divergent, Legion, like, any of those young adult novels that are turned into movies, that just from beginning to end. Well, I already watched the story because it's...
saw the whole fucking thing.
Not this, though, because now I'm like, I want to see this.
Yeah.
It looks really good.
And this is how I want my superhero movies.
Yeah.
I want to be light and fun, and I don't want to hear... I don't want anybody, you know, like, Superman crying over his mom, and Batman, you know, like, do you bleed?
Yeah,
you
yeah,
know,
yeah.
All this kind of stuff. Like, just fucking chill out, everybody.
I'll tell you what, since we've been talking about... all of these movies that are, in essence, coming out in either late spring, summer, 2017. I'm kind of excited that what will eventually come out is an Alien Covenant movie.
Hell yeah.
Because I've been reading reports that they are...
I know,
it,
but
it's
I don't
good.
Want to, I'm going to get my boner up for this thing, just like I did for Prometheus.
It's fucking like, gory as shit. It's
I
a
know.
Horror movie.
And it's xenomorphs and shit like that.
Yeah.
Like, but, like, this happened with fucking Prometheus, and we're all like, yeah, Alien prequel, xenomorphs, huh?
The,
and then right before it drops, Ridley Scott's like, oh, it's not really about xenomorphs. And I'm like, oh, fuck you.
But the poster. The poster is
the
just...
the poster's got a fucking xenomorph on it.
And
so.
It just says, run.
Yeah, I know.
And that's it. I'm like... oh, shit.
I'm all for it, if that's what it is. We've talked about Prometheus before. It's kind of one of those things that's like, all right, it was okay, but it's not what we all thought it was.
It was really, really great and really, really terrible in parts.
Yeah, pretty bad
yeah.
in certain parts. This movie looks like it has the potential to actually be a new Alien movie.
Oh, please, God.
By Ridley Scott.
Like, I know.
Huge budget. Like, he's the biggest Alien movie.
He's got, like, this may be the last one. He's pushing, like, 82, 83 years old.
Like, in his 80s.
Yeah, so, here's hoping.
80-in.
As we wrap up Homecoming. As we wrap up.
In space. No one can hear you mix your meta music.
As we wrap up on the real thing on morelikeradio.com, let's talk Golden Globe nominations. Golden Globe nominations came out
woo-hoo!
This week via the Hollywood Foreign
They're
Press
always
Association.
So weird. Like we were saying earlier, you know, like sometimes they come out. The Golden Globes always sort of jump out ahead of the gate,
yes.
And so you end up getting things like. Yeah, you know, Johnny Depp is nominated for, you know, Best Comedic Performance for The Tourist and things like that, you know, like a couple years ago. Usually,
he was not. It was not nominated this year.
No, The Tourist was movie's fucking 8 years old or whatever. You know,
right.
The one with him and Angelina Jolie.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
There's always a couple nominations in there that are like, you just sort of thought that was going to be Oscar bait, so you gave it to him. I'm not really sure anybody actually watched that.
Okay. So, let's, I'm going to hit the high points.
Mm.
Best Motion Picture Drama. Hacksaw Ridge,
yeah.
Hell or High Water,
hell yeah,
which I did see.
Did you?
And it was very, very good.
Funny, wasn't it?
Very weird, funny parts.
Yeah.
But it all made sense. It was told in a way that actually made sense.
Yes.
Not just like thrown in there and then you've got a
right.
you know, fat naked chick.
Front to back, the way you're supposed to wipe Aaron Taylor Johnson.
Lion, I don't know about that movie.
Lion? Oh, yeah, that's the one with Dev Patel and Nicole Kidman.
Manchester by the Sea and Moonlight.
Mm-hmm.
Motion picture, musical, or comedy.
Pretty standard stuff in there. Hacksaw Ridge kind of got squozing in, I think. They needed another one. But...
Best Motion Picture, and I saw the trailer for this for Nocturnal Animals. 20th Century Women with Annette Bening.
Yeah, new movie by Mike Mills, the guy that made Beginners. I want to see that.
Isn't the Mike Mills like the Mike Mills that used to make all the R.E.M. movie music videos?
Well, Mike Mills was in R.E.M. That was
okay. Okay,
there not same go. Guy, though. Different Mike Mills.
Oh, okay.
No, different guy.
I don't know anything.
That would be really cool.
That would be really cool.
At least you did the R.E.M. math. Come on.
That's thank you very much. Deadpool.
Yeah, that's so weird. And I like it, though.
Is it, though?
It's weird because you just don't think of that movie as being an Oscar contender, or excuse me, as being a award contender, but it should, because in terms of, like, I'm sure there's other good movies that you're about to read from the best comedy or musical, but you'd be hard-pressed to find many movies that people had a better time at this year than Deadpool.
La La Land, Florence Foster Jenkins, Sing Street.
I don't even know what Sing... Oh, I know what Sing Street is, yeah. It's like a British, like, movie, rock movie or whatever. It's so weird that Deadpool got nominated for Best Picture, and it got nominated for Best Picture in the same category as Florence Foster Jenkins.
Meryl Streep will not be denied. That's all I'm saying. So, and Ryan Reynolds actually got nominated for Best Performance by an Actor in a Motion Picture.
I know, it's
musical
so funny
or comedy.
For doing the exact same thing he's been doing forever, except, you know.
In a red suit.
In a red suit with tiny little hands.
Small hands.
Small hands. Smell like cabbage.
All the standard stuff as far as movies are concerned. As far as television. Mm. Best musical or comedy television series. Did you ever see Atlanta or Blackish?
No.
Mozart in the Jungle?
Nope.
Transparent?
Transparent I've seen. Yeah, I've seen a couple episodes.
Well, it doesn't matter because Veep's going to win, so.
I don't know about that.
Really?
The Golden Globes like to give awards to up-and-coming shows.
Gotcha.
Homecoming. I would bet Atlanta would win something like that. Or you know, what was the other one?
Transparent.
Transparent.
Yeah. Or Blackish, I'm sorry. Blackish.
Okay. Yeah. I'll bet you something like Atlanta wins. Golden Globes love to give nominations. They're actually way ahead of the curve, usually, with stuff like that.
Best television series drama, The Crown, mm-hmm. Game of Thrones.
Netflix, Game of Thrones.
Stranger Things. Mm-hmm. Not going to win.
Whatever.
No. This Is Us.
Yeah.
And Westworld.
Westworld. Yeah.
What'd you think of the final episode?
I thought, you know... Well, spoiler alert.
Yeah, spoiler alert.
They killed off Anthony Hopkins, and they might have killed off...
Did they?
And now everybody's going to do this with this fucking show.
Did they?
This fucking goddamn show. Every time somebody does, I'm like, but is he? I sound like Scooby-Doo just then.
I mean, they were building a host when they were killing, what's-her-name.
I know, but first of all, it was an hour and a half long.
Yes.
And I thought they could have made it into a tighter hour.
It could have made it into a tighter season.
And I just thought it was... They sort of advanced some storylines in a good way. And I'm into the show enough that I'll see it for a second season. But I can easily see myself... Especially if... Let's say hypothetically that they did kill off Anthony Hopkins.
Okay.
He's dead. There's no host. There's no Robot Hopkins coming back.
Right.
And they did...
Robo Hopkins.
Robo Hopkins. They did kill off, potentially, Ed Harris, too. You've just killed off your two best actors.
Did they? No, they didn't kill him.
Well, you didn't see it, but you didn't see lots of things. I mean, you can assume that he potentially died. I mean, he's got nothing but a tuxedo and a martini glass, you know, and he's facing down a
with a broken arm.
With a broken arm, he's facing down. How did he get that tuxedo on, by the way, with the broken arm?
I have no idea, man. Yeah,
I know. A lot of things didn't make sense about it. It was a good episode. It was an exciting episode.
I thought that season was bookended by good episodes and one or two really good episodes in between. And
sure.
Just a lot of filler.
Lot of filler. Enough that I'm interested to come back.
But yeah, I'll
come back. A lot of stuff that just doesn't make sense. I don't care about the Rachel Evan Wood character that much. You just haven't made that story interesting for me. I'm sorry.
Okay.
Maybe I'm retarded. I don't care that much about Teddy again.
Okay.
Maybe I'm dumb.
Do you care about Shogun World?
Shogun World?
Samurai World?
Is that where we're going?
I have no idea, but I said, we're walking...
Don't get me all excited, Mark, for Shogun World.
We're walking through this place, and, like, there's fucking the seven samurai, like, Shogun place. I'm like, oh, fuck, that's fucking badass, but then I don't know if they're really going to go into that or just showing it.
The sequel to Westworld was called Future World.
Ah.
The Tandy Newton character, like, getting off that plane or getting off the train for her daughter or whatever? Was that even remotely believable for that character?
Well, no, because they said that they were that was her program. That was what she was supposed to do anyway. So by virtue of that hypothesis, what they were talking about in the show, she was supposed to get off the train.
I guess.
That's the whole problem, is that there's just way... I mean, right. like, again, you're saying, like, I'm retarded, I'm dumb and everything. I don't think that you are, either on the show or in real life, I might add. But I also feel that way, too. Like, am I not smart enough to understand Nocturnal Animals? Am I not smart enough to understand Westworld? Maybe I do need to watch Happy Gilmore all the fucking time, because apparently I'm not sophisticated enough.
No, I mean, you're like me. Like, I love to watch stuff that's not tied together in a little bow at the end. You know, 2001's one of my favorite movies. Barely any fucking talking in it. Like, it's all, you know, it's all, like, your mind putting things together.
Yeah, like,
you gotta give me something to latch on to.
Yeah, I've watched Primer, like, 4 fucking times. Sure. Specifically to try to understand it better with each incremental stuff. Like that or Memento or that type of thing.
Because it's made in such a way that can lead any mind into wanting to understand it, you know?
Yeah.
Westworld was just like, okay, whatever. Well, they're robots. You know, I mean, I kind of shrug at the end of it like, well, that's just robots being robots. You know, like that's kind of how I felt at the end of the show, you know?
Yeah.
And who are we left with to root for? Who are we left with to give a shit about? Nobody. Bunch of fucking robots.
Robots versus humans, the war begins, and...
Yeah, but there's not even any humans left, you know? There's fucking Hopkins and Harris.
Yeah.
God damn, who are you going to get to fill those shoes?
And then the problem beyond that is that it's not even coming back until 2018, so is anyone going to give a shit? It's like Avatar. Like, oh my god, we're going to make an Avatar park, and it's just opening up. It will be opening up next year.
Yeah.
The sequel was forever ago.
Sequel? Avatar?
Although, the original.
They haven't even made a sequel yet. No. He's been talking about, like, making a fucking Avatar sequel.
I'm sorry, he's talked about making 5 of them. And so,
I know!
Yeah, so...
And, like, every couple weeks we get a story from Sigourney Weaver or somebody going, oh my god, this script's amazing. I'm like, okay, fucking shoot it then, if it's amazing.
Yeah.
Make it! God dang, I'm not even gonna remember what it is.
Yeah.
Next week, Orson Welles comes out with a sequel to The Magnificent Ambersons. It's only 78 years.
So anyway, I guess we'll figure out what happens with Westworld, and we'll also definitely be watching the Golden Globes and
Golden Globes for sure. That's in January.
Yeah,
got some good movies coming out.
Not to mention the fact, ladies and gentlemen, of
Rogue One this weekend.
That's right, Rogue One.
Hell yeah, getting good reviews early.
Yeah. So we will leave you. You know what? I've decided, Chris. I know what we're going to leave the listeners of The Real Thing on MoreLikeRadio.com with.
Too.
One of the nominated Best Original Songs Motion Picture nominees, City of Stars from La La Land. We'll leave you with that. Chris Whetton, it is always a pleasure.
Likewise.
Brada. Oh, we should have the drop. Like, welcome to the party, pal!
Welcome to the party, pal!
as always, we appreciate your patronage. It is The Real Thing, MLR. THEREELTHINGMLR. See, I can spell that, but I can't spell MRLMLR. Follow us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter. Hippo Juice is coming up next. My name is Mark Nixon, and Chris Whetton, we are The Real Thing. Thank you very much.
I felt it from the first embrace I shared with you.
That now our dreams finally come true. City of stars, just one thing everybody wants. There in the bars and through the smokescreen of the crowded restaurants, it's love. Yes, all we're looking for is love from someone else.
A rush,
a glance,
a touch,
a dance,
a look in somebody's eyes, to light up the skies, to open the world and send it reeling. A voice that says I'll be here and you'll be alright. I don't care if I know just where I will go, 'cause all that I need's this crazy feeling I got tapped out of my heart.
Think I want it to stay. City of star, are you shining just for me? Silver star,
you never shine so bright.